Our next panel will discuss international perceptions of U.S. competitiveness. We have asked Adele Yusupov to moderate. Adele is the Grains Council Regional Director in Southeast Asia. He's based in Malaysia and manages the Council's activities across the region, including the Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia, India, and others. It's obviously a large territory, and Adele is great representative for U.S. agriculture, and we're real proud to have Adele. Adele will moderate this, and will introduce the guests. Adele?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, let me say good afternoon to our American and Latin American friends, and let me say good morning to all the Asian guys. It's about 5 o'clock in the morning in Asia. So let's shake things up a little bit. Again, my name is Adele. I'm with the U.S. Grains Council in Southeast Asia. I'm very, very, very happy and actually feel fortunate to be asked to talk about this particular topic of U.S. competitiveness. U.S. grain production has been rising, growing over the past 25, 30 years. However, over the past 10 years, we're seeing U.S. market share going down, 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 as globalization of trade has made opportunities brighter for other exporters and producers, such as Latin America or India and alike. So where do we as an exporter and a producer stand among other competition suppliers? And this question has been asked many times, and I myself have been soul-searching. Being based overseas and talking to our customers, I've been soul-searching myself, trying to find an answer to this question and collecting feedback from our customers. So today, we decided to bring this this session closer to you, to the suppliers as well as attending customers. And we've invited representatives from end-user companies from four different regions. Okay, we have one representative from Asia, one from Latin America, one from Middle East, and one from the United States. So let me go ahead and introduce our four panelists today. We're going to ask them to make maybe 7 or 8 minute statement about their views on U.S. competitiveness. And I have already asked them to be very frank in their description. Okay, be very frank in their description and say as things are. So let me introduce our good friend from Taiwan, Dr. Willis Cheng. Dr. Cheng doesn't really need an introduction here. He's been with the Grains Council. He's been a good friend of the Grains Council for over 35 years. Dr. Cheng is chairman of CP Taiwan. He's also the founder of CP Taiwan and CP Turkey. He's been in the business for over 40 years. He's been a good friend of the Grains Council and a very good loyal customer of U.S. Grains. Our next speaker is Musa Wakile. He's from Jordan. Musa is a president owner of National Poultry Al-Liya. I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. It's a poultry business, a broiler layer business, and also he runs a grain trading import and trading company servicing Jordan market. Our next guest is Jamie Rueda from Colombia, and he's the founder, general manager, owner of Escala Group, also a group of poultry and layer businesses, and Jaime is in the business of importing raw materials and trading, supplying them to the poultry group. And finally, our speaker, panelist representing U.S. side of the business is Mr. Dennis Inman. He is the vice president and president and commercial lead for Cargill West United States, Western United States. Everything from California, West Coast, all the way to Mississippi River, a grain origination business is handled by Dennis. So we're going to go ahead. I'm going to give our panelists their time to give their perspective on U.S. competitiveness. And after that, we're going to have Q&A session about their relative topics, as well as we'll open the floor for discussion with the audience. So please take notes. Don't be afraid to ask questions, and let's hope for good discussions. So with that, I'd like to invite Dr. Cheng to give his remarks. I would like to ask you a kind of starting question. If you could briefly describe your company, give us a scope of your operations and your background.
CB Taiwan is number two feed mill of, and number two the broiler integration. We produce around 660,000 tons of the metric ton of the feed, and we produce around 52 million chicken per year. We are market share is around 20% of the market share. And beside all this, we also number one of the market share in the farming, breeding, the market. And we have a two size system of integration, have a 200,000 the head of the pig. We are, anyone is saying about this. Yes.
And what U.S. coarse grains and products have you used in the past and over what period of time? And I guess what portion of your inputs are currently coming from the United States?
We are buying about 422,000 metric tons of corn and 30,000 of the DDGS and 100,000 metric tons of the soybean.
And why does CP Taiwan give preference to U.S. origin?
Well, we buy the U.S. product is first. We think U.S. is number one of the producer of the corn and DDGS. Second is U.S. have a graining and inspection system conducted by the USDA. Number three is we satisfy all the supply and ability of the export ability and the quality of U.S. product. And beside all this, actually our experience of the DDGS is increase the productivity, increase of the survival rate of the pigs, and increase the profit of the farming, hog farm, and reduce the cost, feed cost. So we are quite satisfied to use the confidence to use the DDGS.
Okay, and have you experienced any issues with the U.S. products, whether grains or DDGs or CGM? And if you could talk to us first about the issues you've had, if and how were you able to address these issues with either through the Grains Council or other parties?
Yes, according to our experience, you know, Brazil corn is low moisture, but Argentina corn is corn kernel is too hot, so we must blend with the U.S. corn, and about the India corn, we have too high content of the aflatoxin.
So aflatoxin.
Yes, so we need the blending with the U.S. corn also. The Ukrainian corn is the broken corn is too much. And then also the dust and the foreign material is too high. But U.S. corn is priced too high.
The price is too high for U.S. corn?
Yes.
We've heard this before. Okay. Dr. Cheng, here's a question for you then. Please be frank here, okay?
Yes.
What, in your opinion, can make U.S. corn competitive?
I think first to reduce the price.
And it comes down to price again.
Yeah, we are
traders?
Waiting.
Comments?
We are waiting to buy the U.S. corn, but you know the cost concerning the cost economic. Sometimes we need to consider to outsource. So if we can reduce the cost, that's much better.
Dr. Cheng, what would be say a recent spread between U.S. corn delivered to Taiwan versus Indian corn or Argentine corn?
Around nearly 35,000 to 40,000 metric ton different. U.S. corn is higher than around this amount.
Prices.
Yes, prices.
So 30,000.
30, $30
spread between U.S. corn and Indian corn? Argentine?
No, Brazil corn.
Oh, Brazilian corn. Yes. So $30 spread. Wow, that's significant, yeah.
With India corn is nearly around 40 to 45.
So $40 to $50 spread between U.S. delivered versus Argentine delivered corn.
Yes.
Okay. Dr. Cheng, and finally, what recommendations would you have for U.S. producers, processors, traders, for the U.S. industry in general, including the U.S. Grains Council?
Well, about the DDGS, we suggest due to the processing drying system, could you use the low temperature of the drying system to reduce the overheat?
Okay, so the recommendation for the U.S. DDGS producers is to implement low drying systems for DDGs to reduce the heat damage.
Yes.
Correct.
The second is to cool down the DDGS before put in the container to prevent the caking. Yes. And number three is we suggest to list the specification of nutrition individually. So, for instance, how many percent of the protein, how many percent of the fat, instead of full fat, how many percent? So easy for us to for the nutrition formulation.
So you suggest instead of using a pro-fat basis?
To instead of the is a fat, how many percent?
Okay.
And protein, how many percent?
So split the protein and fat from the pro-fat basis. I see. Okay.
And for the U.S. Grain Council, I think I would suggest to provide the marketing information timely. For example, this year, maybe it's too dry or too hot. Maybe mycotoxin is too high. So if you can give us some information, then we can prevent in ahead. That is better for us to use in the U.S. Product. Second is, I think, to bring our the team to see the U.S. advanced technology so we can increase our productivity. So use more your corn. That is my suggestion.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Those are very good recommendations. Again, I would like to thank Dr. Cheng for making these statements. We are quite fortunate to have Dr. Cheng with us as a representative of the largest feed milling company in the world, not just in Asia. And thank you for your feedback and suggestions. We appreciate that. With that, let me switch to our next panelist, Musa Wakile. Musa, I'll just let you speak.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It is my pleasure to be here today. As Adel said, National Poultry Al Ahliye is involved in poultry production. We produce table eggs, broiler hatching eggs, broiler day old chicks. We trade corn, soybean meal, and vegetable oils as well. We always consider, prefer, and give priority to source out our requirements of corn out of the U.S. As U.S. corn is superior in quality, consistent in quality, and there are standards that the U.S. growers have to follow, standards in production, standards in quality, in specifications, handling, storage, and sustainability. Also, this is an important point that the FGIS inspection is trustworthy. Also, the U.S. traders that are professionals, the shipments that are executed smoothly and on schedule when we import from the U.S., the price, quality, shipment period, and delivery terms that are always guaranteed when importing from the U.S., all of what I mentioned are reasons to consider always U.S. corn and to pay a premium for the U.S. Quality. We also should acknowledge the services and the great efforts that U.S. Grains Council and FAS are providing to poultry producers. U.S. Grains Council and FAS are providing technical support in terms of management, nutrition, integration, feed formulation, poultry disease control, risk management, buying tools. In addition, U.S. Grains Council and FAS are exposing poultry producers to latest technology in the world through inviting poultry producers to attend or to participate in exhibitions, trade shows, fairs, and to participate in technical seminars, training courses that help poultry producers to advance and to improve performance and to improve their businesses. But still, price is playing major role. Yes, poultry producers would buy U.S. corn at a premium price, but when spread between U.S. corn and, as an example, Ukrainian corn is too high to ignore, then medium-sized buyers are encouraged to go for Ukrainian corn. As the price is tempted, small vessels, small shipments are possible. Financing small shipments are always easier. Voyage time is shorter. But on the other hand, equality is not guaranteed. Equality is not consistent. And more important, supply is not consistent. Supply sometimes is restricted for because of ban on exports or duty on export. This is not the case in the when we talk about the U.S. corn, as supply is consistent in the U.S. Talking about some problems in our part, some of the storage facilities in the Middle East are not equipped to maintain the quality of the corn. Poor storage condition help to create fungus problems. Broken kernels increases every time corn is loaded and unloaded. This increases fine matter content that some producers and feed millers consider it dust, while the fact that it is fine matter, pure starch with high nutrition value. The reaction of U.S. Grains Council, FGIS, and FAS to this problem, that they donated lab equipment with training of the staff on how to take samples and how to analyze samples. Finally, my recommendation to the U.S. Grains Council is to continue being active in the Middle East, as it is the fastest growing market. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Musa. Question for me, quick question from you. What origins are we competing with in the Middle East?
Sorry, sir.
Which origins do we compete with in the Middle East?
In the Middle East, you know, when we talk about, you know, American versus Argentinian as an example, you know, buyers prefer to buy from the U.S. because the freight from the U.S. to the Middle East is less expensive.
Freight.
But yeah, okay. Freight. But when we talk, when we compare versus the Black Sea country origin, it is, you know, during the season production, it is impossible to compete because sometimes the spread is too high to ignore. Yes, the quality is not as good as the American, mm-hmm. but you know the feed millers and the traders sometimes don't care about the quality. The integrators, they do care about the quality. They prefer the American corn. They pay a premium for the American corn because they use it for their own operations. But when we talk about trading or feed millers, sometimes they don't care. They just add some you know feed additives to make sure that you know they treat say aflatoxins and fungus, etc.
Okay. And what is the average price spread between Ukrainian corn versus U.S. corn delivered?
It is up to 20 U.S. dollar, 25 U.S. dollars sometimes.
20 to 25 U.S. dollars per metric ton.
Yeah. It is not only the spread. There are some other factors to consider that, you know, anyone can import 3,000 metric ton out of the Black Sea. Small vessel, easy to finance, voyage time is short. So, you know, when during the season time, you know, many traders that we never heard about them, they are all of a sudden they are in the market offering Black Sea corn. But quality-wise, you know, I know as a fact, most of the integrators prefer to use the U.S. corn.
Okay, thank you. So I do have one more question, but I'll have to ask you later. We're running off time on you. So I'd like to ask our next panelist, Jaime, to give your perspective. If you could tell us briefly about your company, yourself, your business, and what do you think of U.S. competitiveness and your recommendations.
Okay. Well, okay. Thank you, Adele. I want to thank you guys for the honor and the privilege to be in front of such an important audience. Thank to Chairman Fast and to you, Adele, and to Kurt and Cesar and Alejandro for this opportunity. Scala is a trading platform that was created by 10 poultry companies in Colombia to purchase all the ingredients for their feed production. Those companies, their market share in Colombia, it's about 34% of the commercial layers and about 12% of the broilers production. We produce around 1 million tons of feed per year. In mills located in the big production regions in Colombia, from Northeast Colombia, Central Colombia, and Southwest Colombia. And we buy from several origins all of our ingredients. Our most important origins are U.S., Argentina, Brazil, Germany, China, France, and Paraguay, and that's what we do, basically.
And what is your experience using U.S. grains so far, and how does that experience compare to using other origins?
Okay, we've used corn from the U.S. and basically all the corn co-products. Back in 2007 and before that, all our purchases were from the U.S. After that, from 2008 till 2011, we bought most of our corn from South America, mostly Argentina, some from Brazil. There was back then, we had a huge duty difference that made U.S. corn more expensive. But it was like a political reason, and internal Colombian reason, because there was a free trade agreement with Mercosur and there was not a free trade agreement with the U.S. Since May this year, we started with a free trade agreement with the U.S. We started to buy more U.S. corn, but still the vast majority, the most we buy is from South America, because there's a, I would say, big gap of prices between the two origins. But we do use more U.S. corn now than we used to. Regarding to the co-products, we use almost all of them. Well, you know, regarding to, I'm going back to corn. We import about 500,000 tons of corn, which is like the big ingredient we buy. But we also buy DDGs. We buy about 20,000 tons a year. We prefer the typical golden DDGS. Our nutritionists, especially the broiler nutritionists, don't like the low-fat DDG that much. We have been using DDGs for quite a while. We also use corn gluten meal. We buy about 10,000 tons a year. And also corn gluten feed. We also buy around 10,000 tons a year of that product. That's what we mostly use from corn and co-products.
And you mentioned you also, so in addition to U.S. corn, you're buying South American corn.
Yeah.
What makes you buy U.S. corn, though?
Okay.
I understand it's a premium.
Yeah.
But you still buy it.
There are two big reasons. There's a pretty important logistical reason. First of all, we use the Atlantic Sea Colombian ports and the Pacific Sea Colombian, the Pacific Ocean Colombian ports. So logistically, the Gulf is a lot closer than South America to our ports. Our trip from the Gulf to Atlantic Colombia is about 4.5 days. To Pacific Colombia is about 7 days, and from just about any southern port of Brazil or upriver Argentina to our ports, either in the Atlantic or the Pacific, is about 18 days. So there's a longer trip, which makes the logistical operation a little bit more difficult. The other thing is that logistics in general are more predictable from the U.S. Specifically, I'm talking about lineups. You know clearly know about the lineups in the elevators here. This year, we had a 60-day lineup in Santos in Brazil, which is pretty complicated to handle. The other thing is that there's also a stability economically and politically when you buy from the U.S. Our main supplier is Argentina. This year we have had 10 port-related strikes in Argentina, which makes logistics complicated. So I guess I'm making a pretty specific point about logistics, right? There's a big difference, but it's also a high price. But there's a second and very important thing, and this is pretty new. In the broiler side of our operation, our nutritionist found a contamination with raw soybeans from South American corn. It's pretty low. It's only 0.3%. That little contamination, and it's because their export facilities are made for a larger soybeans export. So it's pretty easy to have that contamination. That little contamination produces, you know, in the corn we measure a thing that usually we didn't do that before. We measure the trypsin inhibitors, and we found some levels of trypsin inhibitors, which is an anti-nutritional factor, and that it's producing us with, in combination with other factors, is producing what we call wet litter. So in our broiler side, some of our companies are blending U.S. corn and South American corn because of this matter.
Okay. Thank you. And last question, what would be your recommendation for the U.S. grain export industry, for the Grains Council, U.S. producers in general?
Well, it's pretty, actually it's pretty simple. You know, you have to watch out the price gap with corn. In order to facilitate logistics, we need the corn. I mean, it's a lot easier if we have the big volume ingredient. So once we have a shorter gap, it would facilitate us a lot our operation. That's basically it.
Okay. Thank you, Jaime. Let's move to our next panelist. I don't think Cargill really needs an introduction here as a company. So, Dennis, you could just go ahead and jump into the into your speech. You know, again, Dennis covers half of the United States origination for Cargill and supplying to the Cargill's trading department of U.S. grains and oilseeds, I understand. So, Dennis, if you could give us your perspective, maybe as even response to this, to the feedback you've heard as an exporter, as an originator of U.S. grain, as an exporter.
Great, thanks, Adele. Well, I'll start by saying that we're also an importer of grains and oilseeds, and you know, throughout the world. I mean, we could have any number of Cargill people sit on the same panel talking about feedstocks that we're bringing in to feed livestock to run a feed mill. For a processing plant in Europe, and so on. So many of the same issues, including price, which I got loud and clear, are the similar issues. So I'll get to, I want to come back to that and talk about, what the gap means and how do we address it. I will start by saying, by giving a little bit of a description about Cargill. And as I describe our business to people, I always talk in terms of taking grain from points of surplus to points of deficit, or taking grain from times of surplus to times of deficit. So the role and function that we play in the global grain trade is originating grain from producers in places like the Midwest, dealing with customers like Ron and John that were up here this morning, originating grain from them, receiving it into our facilities. We operate about 100 interior U.S. grain assets, assets that do anything from load shuttle trains to the Pacific Northwest, barges to the Gulf of Mexico. We do some container loading, and we've got a few places where we'll even truck grain to an export market. So a primary business, and that's the business that I'm most closely related to, is the production side of the business and origination from farmers. We do operate, as you all know, we operate ports throughout the world, both import and export ports. Primarily here in the U.S., it's out of the Gulf of Mexico, the Texas Gulf, and the Pacific Northwest. We do a little bit out of other other ports in the U.S. But the role and function then of the port is to receive grain from the interior assets, and we buy grain not only direct from producers at our own assets to ship for export, but we also buy from a lot of strategic customers and partners here in the U.S. So grain is received at the ports. Stored, conditioned, handled, dried, cleaned, whatever needs to be done to meet those needs of our customers. And that's a lot of what I heard, these guys talk about today about what's important to them. And so, the one piece of advice, and that was one of the questions, was what piece of advice would you give to importers? And I'll start there by saying, I started in this business about 30 years ago in the mid 70s. We were selling a million tons or 2 million tons at a time to places like the former Soviet Union. And I honestly thought, and of course I was 22 years old and pretty young and naive, but I thought there were two kinds of corn in the world, U.S. number 2 yellow corn and U.S. number 3 yellow corn. And everything was on a tender, and you either sold it in a big boat or a small boat. And that's kind of how I thought the business worked, and that you know, it was all about price, and it was all about a very generic commodity. And as I've gained more experience in the business and working closer with customers like these gentlemen and domestic customers, what I really have started to realize is what we're selling is, you know, a feed ingredient, or we're selling a raw material for a processing business. And then beyond that, we're selling logistics and inventory management and financing and flexibility and optionality and a lot of different things that go well beyond just selling a commodity out of the U.S. And I think that as we go forward and talk about the price gaps, one of the things that we need to recognize is we do need to do all of those things and be price competitive. But what I, you know, my first piece of advice to, to customers, and whether or not this is a consumer somewhere somewhere in another part of the world or one of our farm customers here in the U.S., is to, clearly articulate what your expectations are. And, I've heard terms today about, quality, good quality. And, in our language, we talk about quality in terms of conformance to requirements. So what are those very specific requirements? And just saying good or, the best you can do isn't necessarily as specific of a requirement as what we need to be able to provide. So again, whether that's a specific level of aflatoxin, whether that's a shipment period, whether that's a tolerance on a on the weights on a on the volume on a vessel, the optionality of origin, all of those things. What are your requirements? And all too frequently, I think what we see with customers, again, whether it's a farmer or whether it's a consumer, is the expectations weren't clearly understood by both parties at the onset of the transaction, and then when something doesn't meet the expectation, that's when a problem is identified and has to be dealt with. The other thing that I would say though too is that also be careful what you ask for when you're defining requirements. I think one of the things that we see oftentimes with maybe with a nutritionist, and I heard that, and I'm sorry if I offend any of the nutritionists in the room, but I want everything, and I'll tell you, we can provide everything, but know that everything comes with a price, and sometimes that price that we have to build into that exacting requirement might outweigh the economic benefit. And again, I listening to Dr. Scherson I thought was fantastic when he talked about the different requirements or the different attributes of distiller's grains. And again, understand that if you want distiller's grains that are a very exacting requirement, all the way down to color, how does that get priced, and does that deliver the same economic value as something perhaps a bit more generic, but still a specific requirement. The last piece of advice that I would give is build a relationship with your supplier. And again, I learned that it wasn't just about selling a generic commodity to a governmental buying agency that was put up for auction. And by the way, that may make sense in some circumstances. If you want to buy grain on a public tender, that may very well make sense. Again, to go back to the expectations, is if you're putting grain out for bid on a public tender for a generic commodity, that's probably what you're going to get. But we would really encourage, and one of the things that we found value, again, with farm customers and with consumers, is to really build a strong relationship, a relationship that is, that is based on things that are of mutual value and that can create flexibility. So I was listening to the previous panelist, and I just jotted down some of the things that I heard were important to them, market information. So finding a supplier that can provide you with market information. We can't predict the weather. You know, we can't predict, you know, we couldn't necessarily have predicted that we were going from, you know, $5 corn to $8 corn this year. But certainly we had a, you know, we have people around the world on the ground talking to producers and consumers, looking at crops. So finding a supplier that can provide you with good market information. I heard FGIS being a trustworthy, inspection agency. And again, having that kind of certainty of when I buy something, I know what I'm going to get. We define trust in Cargill as among other things, reliability. What have I gotten in the past? Have they delivered on, you know, have they delivered on promises? Has, you know, have my grades held up from origin to destination? One of the things that we do, and we don't know what others in the industry do, but we have very, very exacting rules around what kind of moisture we're willing to blend into a shipment so that we can ensure the stability of a product from origin to destination. I heard consistent quality. Am I getting the same thing every time? And I'm not a nutritionist, and I grew up in a farm around livestock, and I did know that my dad always talked about, you know, the variabilities of crops and what that did to our milk production if there was inconsistent quality of the feedstocks we were using. I heard supply of consistent supply, and that's one of the things that I think that, there's been a lot of discussion in the U.S. this year about, are we going to have enough corn to satisfy the domestic demand, the ethanol demand, and our export customers? And the answer is yes, we will, and we'll let the market work versus trying to embargo shipments or some of those things. So a consistent and reliable supply of grain. Jaime talked a lot about the logistical reasons. You know, just-in-time inventory, 60-day lineup of boats in Santos, and again, that's not, you know, I can't promise that the U.S. can outdo all of those things, but I do think that we have a lot of capabilities to be able to deliver on those. And it's also about understanding what your logistical limitations are and what's the trade-off for a boat waiting in line for 60 days versus one that that's got a transit time of 7 days. That all builds into the ultimate price. I heard predictability. I know what to expect. And then lastly, I heard political issues of taxes, and I know that I'm not that closely connected to our businesses in Argentina, but I hear enough chatter around that it's a challenge for us as well of being an exporter or port reliability and so on. So I think those are some of the things that I think my recommendation to anyone in the audience that's an importer of grain. It's about building a strong relationship, identifying what your expectations are, clearly articulating them, and then finding a supplier that can provide them. And ultimately that still needs to be price competitive, but the question often is that does it need to be the exact same price as what you might get from someone that has less reliability, less predictability, less market information? And ultimately, I think you get what you probably get what you pay for. And over time, hopefully, places like the United States that can deliver on those can create more value for you guys as consumers. And ultimately, that's what we want. That's what our farmer customers want.
Okay. Very insightful. Thank you. Dennis, I have a follow-up question for you. You mentioned that we're getting into a period of pretty much trading feed values, micro-ingredients, proteins, energy levels, and so on. In your opinion, is FGIS standard system, number one, number two, number three commodity groupings, are they relevant? Are they going to stay relevant as we go, further in the future? Is that system relevant to the trade?
I think there's relevance in terms of, you know, U.S. number two yellow corn, but U.S. number two yellow corn doesn't include a moisture standard. So, you know, we often sell U.S. number two yellow corn, 14.5 moisture. And so I think there is that relevance of having a, you know, independent agency doing the grading. But perhaps what comes in the future is, you know, additional characteristics that we may be asking the FGIS to provide, or maybe it's an independent lab, or, you know, whatever. So I wouldn't say that they're irrelevant, but I would say that you know, going forward, and what I've seen in my career at Cargill is that there are more items that you know, are more characteristics of grain. I spent my early career in Southwest Minnesota, and we were selling some grain to Taiwan at the time that had a requirement for less than 10% of the kernels could have a stress crack. Well, that wasn't an FGIS characteristic, but it was one, and it was U.S. number two yellow corn with less than 10% stress crack. So I think there's probably something more that comes in the future.
Jaime, would you like to comment on that question about the FGIS system? Is it relevant to you as an importer?
As you said before, the different specs that we would like, they all cost something. So it's more about two words that Dr. Sherson said before. It's consistency and predictability. I mean, that's the two things. Not necessarily the very best of the best is what we need. We need more consistency than anything else. And, of course, predictability.
Okay. Thank you. I would like to... can I make a comment here quickly, Don? If we go over time, just raise a flag and I'll close this. Okay. But I'm based in Southeast Asia, and one of the issues that we have in Southeast Asia is, unfortunately, one of the challenges that we have in Southeast Asia is what the Grains Council is known for. That's the marketing of U.S. corn. We have a very, very low market share, despite being the third largest market for DDGs. And reasons for that are numerous. I've learned talking to my customers. It's higher moisture than South American origin, higher stress cracks, higher brokens, maybe more dusty. So there's some quality issues and so on. But over the past couple of years, I was interviewing both traders as well as end users, I have come to a realization that the number one reason for the lack of the low market share in Southeast Asia for U.S. corn, as well as probably other regions, is not the quality, but it's an margin issue for traders. It is the competitiveness of freight coming out of the United States versus South America. If I'm a trader, and if I'm an FOB buyer, and if I buy my corn out of Argentina, if I can load 75,000 metric ton boat out of Rosario versus loading 65,000 tons maximum out of PNW, I get $5 to $7 freight advantage originating that corn out of South America than the United States. And the majority of the corn traded into my region is traded by 6-7 big, ABCDs, obviously, and then the Asian NAOs, Noble, Olam, and Wilmar groups. And these traders are at large the weather makers in the grain market in my region. So the message, if I guess representing U.S. industry in overseas market, the message that I would put forward to the U.S. industry is that we need to get our infrastructure, export port infrastructure, modernized. And that means getting bigger boats with deeper drafts, Supermax ships, 75,000, 85,000 tons, being able to load these vessels so that traders can originate U.S. grains, U.S. soybeans, or meals out of the U.S. ports at a competitive freight rate to Latin American. That would be my note I would like to put forward to the U.S. industry. Thank you. Well, now we do have a few minutes for questions for the audience. I would encourage you to be frank. If you would like to make a comment about the questions we discussed, feel free to do so. We're very receptive to your feedback as well. Or if you have any, if you have questions for the panelists, we're all waiting for those.
I actually have a question to get us started off. First of all, thank you all very much for your frank discussions and informational analysis, including you, Adele. With the tremendous spread that we're seeing between North American, U.S., and South American corn right now, we're getting a lot of reports of logistical nightmares in South America. And Jaime and Dennis kind of alluded to that. I have two questions, and I guess I'll tailor the first one to Jaime, and then maybe, Dennis, you can tackle the second one. My first question is, how bad is it? What's the real situation? We've got a lot of buyers and a lot of sellers in the room here. Can we get some actual real-time analysis of the situation down there? And then my follow-up question to that would be, is this going to translate into the firming of the basis for South America? And will, in your opinion, will this soon make U.S. corn more competitive?
Okay, well, the situation is bad. The last 3 or 4 months from loading from Brazil has been very difficult regarding on lineups, pretty long lineups. So it's kind of tough to coordinate all the vessels to get into our ports at the time we need that. And I'm talking about more than 30 days on average, and we had vessels of more than 60 days lined up in some Brazilian ports. So that's a really bad situation. In Argentina, as I told you guys before, we've had several strikes from different parts of the logistical chain, but they're all port related. At the end of the day, it always harm us regarding our logistics and our just-on-time operation. Today, we have two vessels that are loaded, one in upriver Rosario and the other one in Bahía Blanca in Argentina, and they are just there since it's been 10 days now waiting for a government permission for depart. So we're just waiting, and it's been 10 days already. So that costs some money, and that's kind of a hard situation to handle. But still, if there's a big gap in price, it's part of the cost. You have to take that into consideration. So why we still buy from there, because there's a huge difference specifically to our Atlantic ports, but definitely it's part of the equation. We take that in consideration in order to make the purchase. So if there was a smaller gap, we probably would be buying all from the U.S.
I would just follow that up by saying, first of all, this year I think is a bit unique for most of us, having the magnitude of the drought and the tightness of the corn supply in the United States. But ultimately, I would say that to answer your second question I'm a true believer that the markets will ultimately work, and that if the price spread becomes too much, that yes, it will. I mean or the delays become too much, that would maybe push some business back to the U.S. And I think that longer term, but I think the reality is that at $25 or $30 a ton discount to U.S. grain, other places in the world will improve their export capacity, will improve their production. The U.S. will figure out a way to get more competitive, and that price gap ultimately will close. I mean, it works that way. I mean, farmers in the U.S. responded to lower prices by doing a fantastic job of supporting the ethanol industry and building that business, and now have responded very well to higher prices by planting 96 million acres of corn. Now we still need to have it rain, but we're looking at we're working on a project with our customers to economically and sustainably produce 2.5 tons of soybeans per acre and 7.5 tons of corn per acre on a and it's driven by strong demand and strong prices. So I think ultimately, we'll see some of that price gap close.
Amen to that, to the markets. I fully agree. Do not bet against the supply side. As long as the markets are open, U.S. farmers will produce. They will respond to the demand as long as the markets are open. We do have a couple of questions from the audience.
I'm Jim Ringo with Poet Nutrition. My question to the three gentlemen from outside the United States is I'm curious to the implications or impact of higher feed ingredient prices to your business and whether you see that affecting your demand for poultry, swine, the products that you'll be selling in your markets.
So the question was, what are the implications of high feed prices, feed ingredient prices on your business as a feed miller, as a trader, as a poultry producer? Musa would like to take this one.
Actually, it depends. It varies from country to country. In some countries, although the prices of feed ingredients went up very high, but it didn't affect the prices of poultry products because the demand went down sharply because of the economical situation and the unrest that we have in some country. So, generally speaking, it is all about supply demand. In poultry production, because we are talking about live products, if there is demand, the prices go up. If there is no demand, the prices go down. In most of the countries that they have unrest, the demand, the prices of feed grains went up so high for two reasons: for the international prices, one reason, and for the shortage in supplies. They started to import less than they used to import, but still. The poultry products didn't go up, on the same level. In the countries that they have security and stability, the prices went up a lot, in the same ratio, say.
Okay, thank you. We do have time for just one more question.
No, the first question is probably referred back to the quality issue of the corn from different origin. Regardless what the physical quality, what the performance is, as a nutritionist, I like to prove it with the data on the performance of the animal at the end. Is there any difference of feeding value between U.S. corn and Argentine and or probably Indian corn? When you're feeding to the broiler, for example, if there's a difference in FCR, we can calculate how much the value at one point of the FCR, so you can put the different value between origin. Is there any proof data at the moment that there is a different feeding value at the end when you feed it to the animals between different corn? The second question probably going to Dr. Cheng regarding the importation of DDG. In your experience importing 30,000 tons of DDG, for example, what kind of the problem you encounter, technical problem you encounter, is there any solution to solve the problem in experience in Taiwan?
Okay, well, let's get on to the first question. Is there a difference in nutritional terms between the U.S. corn and Argentine or Brazilian corn origins? I guess this will, you'll have to get some nutritionist in you to talk about this, whether it's animal performance, weight gain. Have you seen any difference? Dr. Chen, maybe. Do you have any comments on that?
Want me to answer the DDGS, right?
Okay. All right, guys. Any comment on the first question?
Talking about Indian corn as an example, yes, there is a significant differences in performance in poultry production when we feed Indian corn. You know, it is not only actually feed conversion ratio; it is also a problem in nutrition problems in terms of aflatoxins and fungus, and you know, sometimes it is contaminated with, as an example, salmonellosis problem. Like, yeah,
that's Indian corn you mentioned,
yeah.
Right? Indian corn,
Indian
in
corn.
Jordan.
I'm talking about Indian corn
versus U.S.
Yeah.
corn. Okay, so some issues with Indian corn in poultry, including aflatoxin. And the second question about DDGs, Dr. Cheng?
Yes, we have some problem all the sometime. We have a problem for import the DDGs. For example, overheating, or the, some caking, or some the, our mycotoxin is too high. And some is, you know, timely when we are shipped by the ship, time, we cannot on time. And third is we have sometimes the, you know, if too much content of the, in the formula, you have wet dropping or the chicken dropping. So menu. So this is our problem. So all you need to how to save in this problem, you need to select a reliable supplier and concern. Always control what is your situation, and before you come, you need to analyze and to be the, after that to use it you are in the formula.
Okay, so repeat Dennis's comment is: know your supplier, establish long lasting relationship with the supplier of your product to assure consistency of product quality.